Hey, Paul.
Hey, John. How are you? Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. How's your city doing?
We are getting busy again, New York City. They're putting the tree up at Rockefeller Center. The ice skating rink is going, so the whole holiday vibe is happening.
Thank God.
Yeah, and we know that a lot of tourists are there because a lot of people looking up at the buildings and bumping into you when you're trying to get to work. So,
can't live with them. You can't live without them.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm rushing to get to the studio over at the Late Show, and it's like. It's, you know, a family of six taking a selfie in the middle of the sidewalk. And of course the New Yorker, you gotta be nice. But part of me is like, you can move off to the side. Like I want to yell at him, but I can't. So it's like, you know,
that's right. Go get a bagel. Go get it. The bagels are good over there. Get out of the way.
Exactly. but yeah, it's nice to see. It was weird, you know, like back in March, 2020, you know, when we were at the height of this thing and then everything started to shut down and the city was a weird ghost town. The only time it's like that is if there's a really big snowstorm and everything shuts down, but then the city becomes romantic. It's like, it feels like the 1800s and people are walking around and smiling, but this was like, you know, and then they put those tents up, medical tents, big white medical tents up in Central Park. You've been on Broadway, you've lived here. And so my wife and my son and I, you know, you go to the, you live in an apartment, you walk around a little bit, you go into the supermarket, everybody's wearing a mask. It was crazy. So, and then I got COVID in June of 2020 performing at a venue down in Florida and, you know, nobody was wearing masks and this was before the vaccine. So it was quite a ride, but it's nice to see it back. The city feels like the city again.
Good. You know?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Good. So I want to tell everybody who we're talking to. John.
Okay.
Hey, everybody.
This is Mount Kisco Schneider here.
There you go. Mount Kisco. I know. I noticed that. This is John Schneider. You know him from the Bo Duke, the Dukes of Hazzard, Smallville, Tyler Perry's Have and Have Nots, but also really terrific independent filmmaker, you know, with the movie Christmas Cars, Stand On It. And his film that's out now is called Poker Run. And we're going to talk about that. It's going to talk that in a second. But yeah, you're a Mount Kisco kid. And, you know, I guess because of you're such a good actor, I thought you were a good old Southern boy. I had no idea that you were you were a New Yorker.
Well, I'm from the south side of Main Street.
There you go. Yeah. Did you grow up as a military? I mean, your dad was in the Air Force, right? Did you travel a lot as a military family, or were you pretty?
No. He was out of the Air Force by the time I was around.
Okay.
So no, I lived in Mount Kisco, lived in Bedford Hills for a little while, and lived with my we moved to my grandparents in Katona. So I did those three stops off the what is it, the Brewster Line? Did those three stops off the Sawmill Parkway.
Yep.
And used to go see when a new movie came out. Usually the Mount Kisco Theater didn't get it right away, so I had to go all the way to White Plains.
Oh boy. Living large.
And you know, it's funny. I was just talking to somebody the other day, you know, who's from Katona and went to my brother's high school. There's two people, Ari Fleischer went to John Jay and Roger Stone went to John Jay.
Oh, I didn't know
of
that.
Of course you got crazy. I don't know when end of a firearm from another Baldwin that lived in Bedford Hills.
Right.
Bedford Village. Yeah, my God. What a train wreck.
Oh,
that
my God. Is. That's so
and,
bad.
And we've got me in Mount Kisco.
Wow. Did you have fond memories of it? Like, did you move to Atlanta when you were like 14 or 15?
Little
right?
League baseball and Little League baseball and Little League football and Leonard Park and, first play I ever did. I started this crazy profession when I was 8 years old. Was actually on a stage at John Jay High School. Somebody had rented it. We did Little Abner.
Wow!
So I have very fond memories of that. And my grandfather was a volunteer fireman in Katona, so there was a parade and a carnival every year. Used to dress up as a clown. In fact, I think. movies that my wife and I make. We've made 10 in the last 7 years. And we're totally independent with regard to how we make them, with whom we make them, and also how we distribute them.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of, I'm very public about my dislike of conventional Hollywood. People say, what's it feel like to be canceled? I say, hang on a second, pal. Nobody canceled me. I quit. So if that doesn't sound like a New Yorker, what does?
Exactly.
So we started our own company, and we distribute through our website and through our own streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that spirit, I think, as I keep talking about it, a lot of that spirit came from me growing up in Mount Kisco is a village, and I think Katona is a hamlet,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of those kids that had a lemonade stand in Katona. I had a shoe shine stand. You know, I was always raised that go out and make it happen.
Yeah.
It's not going to knock on your door. Opportunity does not knock on your door. You have to go and create it.
Right.
And I've been doing that since I was 8 years old.
Mm.
So when I finally got out of California, which was back in 2011,
mm-hmm.
With every aspiration and every focus on building a company in Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
I made one film the conventional way and sold it to a distributor. And that's been 7 years ago. And they still say they haven't made a dime.
Mm.
They're still just lying out their spreadsheet.
Yeah.
But since then, Alicia and I have made 10 and we're doing great.
Yeah.
So I tell people we are we're the farmer's market of independent film. When you buy a head of lettuce, right? And you know what I mean? When you buy a head of lettuce from a farmer's market, the farmer is appreciative.
Right, right.
So,
right.
You know, and that's the same mentality as when you bought a lemonade from me or I shined your shoes back in 1969, I appreciated that quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd rather have it this way. You know, I don't like to be beholden to somebody, and then all of a sudden they're backing something that I don't like, and I feel like I have to stay quiet because I don't want to insult the people I work for. Well, that's no way for me to live.
Yeah.
So I picked up my shovel and my little blue bucket, and I left their sandbox, and we built our own.
That's the American way, and good for you. I mean, you know, that's an entrepreneurial spirit. That entrepreneurial spirit is what created Hollywood. But then Hollywood became into this big amorphous sort of, you know, monolithic machine. And explain to us, or you know, we kind of know when we say conventional Hollywood, I think we both kind of know what that means. But explain in a nutshell what that means and what the frustration was for you, because you had great success and you still do have great success, but you know, you're coming off a couple of huge TV series and you know, success means power in Hollywood and all of that. But like, what was it that frustrated you or continues to frustrate you and why you felt you need to go this direction, which I think is a great direction to go?
Well, I tell you, I'd always tried to go that direction anyway, but I thought I could do it within the machine.
Yeah.
But it's folly to think that you can convince the machine to do something that is against its core beliefs.
For example,
and I have nothing against Hollywood's core beliefs. I just don't believe them.
Right. But like, right? for example, like in terms of how they promote movies or the kind of movies they make.
Well,
or
the movies that they make, the underlying message of much of the Hollywood machine. Mm. Are things that I disagree with, and so I didn't want to help them sell their soap.
Oh, I see.
I don't blame them for it, but I don't want to help them.
Right.
And now more than ever now, the Hollywood is owned by much much bigger corporations. Hollywood itself, the entire film business,
right,
is nothing more than a line item on a much bigger global spreadsheet.
Absolutely.
So the propaganda machine that Hollywood is really now just a small part of what several very large companies are doing. So I'm not coming against Hollywood. What I'm saying is, you know, I disagree with you. So I'm going to make my own stories. I believe in the family unit. I believe in making things that cause people to think. I believe in that sometimes in a perfect world, bad things do happen to bad people. And good people are forced, due to circumstances beyond their control, to do very bad things.
Yeah.
These are things I believe in.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, it's definitely
and I believe you can squeal tires on a dirt road. So.
Well, that, listen, so, I grew up in Rhode Island in New England, and we used to do that with my mom's Oldsmobile Cutlass, which was a 350 V8 and had a four-barrel carburetor. So, you know, that's good old American, just being an idiot in high school.
There you go.
Driving around.
You know, I've been in the 4th of July parade on Block Island. Before my dad passed away, my dad and I and my daughter rode in the 4th of July parade there. My stepmom is still alive and kicking. She's 90 glorious years old. She used to work for a great organization called Reader's Digest.
Mm-hmm.
And so if Sheila's listening, hello, Sheila, I love you.
Happy
Thanksgiving. Yeah. So, you know, it's important, I think, like you are, you've got your podcast, you are expressing your own views and opinions,
right?
The way that you know how, kind of like Dukes of Hazzard, making our way the only way we know how.
Right.
And, it is the American dream. We do have the availability to have a voice now, the reach of which we certainly have never had.
Yeah.
But in the days when you had to advertise your stuff by buying A through C on a mailing list, I used to do that. I used to send junk mail to people trying to sell my VHS tapes. So, you know, this is... being an independent filmmaker and thinking independently and distributing independently has been in my sights since before Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah.
I used to make movies with my Super 8 camera. So, it's a glorious time for us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I appreciate what you're doing in the sense that I had another career. I was on Wall Street. I was a lawyer. I was doing M&A corporate deals and then an investment banker. And then I started making short films, and I started writing jokes. I don't know why. I always loved watching comedians on TV at night. You know, I would always beg my parents to stay up to watch whoever was on Letterman or Carson or whatever, you know, and then I'd go in and I'd do their bits in the locker room, and everybody thought I was really funny. I do like Rodney Dangerfield and stuff, but I never thought I was going to do it. And then, I met Jay Leno at a private function. I gave him some of my jokes, and he hired me to send the jokes for the Tonight Show monologue. And then I started doing stand up myself and acting. And then I got really
great.
And then I was working 100-hour week every week, day, night, weekends at this, my regular job. It was really intense. And I was trying to do this at night on the side, and I was about to have a nervous breakdown. And I'm like, I either got to stop doing the entertainment thing or go for it. And I said, well, I got to go for it, and sold my apartment. And my wife was really cool about it, and we started over again. And there's a lot of dips.
Good for you.
There's a lot of peaks and valleys in that story. And we're actually thinking about a book or a TV show about it. But the point is, I appreciate that sort of, because I was in the sort of big corporate setting. So a lot of things got done for you, you know, but when you're on your own, you're, like you said, you know, the email blasts and handing stuff out after shows and promoting and all of that part of it. It's a lot of work. You got to really be passionate about your art and what you're putting out there, because there's a lot, it's very easy to go, oh, this is too hard. I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go back to the big system, you know? So I really admire you for that.
Yeah. But you know, and I'm so glad you're doing it the way you're doing it. There's no other way really to succeed, because the other way people can just shut you off if they want.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. they can't cancel me. They can't cancel you because we quit them.
Right. Right.
We exactly. have our own sandbox and our own toys, and we invite people to come into our sandbox.
Right. Exactly.
And, you know, the older I get, the more I realize that what you're doing and what I'm doing is exactly what the little rascals did when they put on that play in the barn.
Huh. That's really true. I never thought of that, but you're absolutely right.
You know, they did Shakespeare, they did music, they did stand up, they did everything.
Yeah.
And they even, I think they said, pay as you exit.
Yeah.
So if you enjoyed the show, then buy it on the way out.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's the more I get down this road, the more I realize that I'm really just copying one of my favorite shows of all time, which is The Little Rascals.
Yeah. Well, it's great. You know, you have these surreal moments, and we got to talk about your film. I don't want to forget that, but this is such a great conversation. I don't want, but I will say, like, you know, I just had a part in a movie, and it was a serious part, and I had to actually put a gun in somebody's face, and then I had to get shot with squibs, and I had to die a certain way, and I had a moment when I was right. on set, and I've acted a bunch, but like I was just like, I wouldn't, if I were still on Wall Street, I wouldn't be here, you know what I mean, and having this experience, and
right,
and you know, because when I made the shift, there are doubts. I'm sure when you decided to take, as you say, create your own sandbox, you know, my story, I would like to tell in a larger way, because you hear these stories, oh, someone had a dream and they pursued it and they achieved it. And no, there's those sleepless nights and what am I doing? And is this a mistake? And this is too hard. And I think those moments should be talked about and put into the light, because I think that it's inspirational for people to hear that people who've succeeded at sort of making their own path, like you have, you know, it hit obstacles, because there are going to be obstacles. And so, but I remember standing on set just
should expect them. You should expect, if you don't encounter any opposition, then you're probably not doing something that's worth much.
Right.
If you have the ball and nobody's on your butt, then you're not a good player.
Right.
Exactly. So expect opposition, welcome opposition as something that is a very, very good sign that you're doing the right thing.
Have you ever gotten sort of just coming into when you started this? I mean, 10 films, independent film, that's a huge accomplishment. But in the beginning, were you just, did you ever hit one of those days where you're like, this is too hard, or I can't quite figure this out? Like, what have been some of the biggest speed bumps for you in sort of making that transition out of, you know, conventional Hollywood?
Well, the biggest obstacle for us was not making the movies, because we really know how to do that. And by the way, my wife used to run Robert Evans' company at Paramount.
Oh,
so she produced a movie, several, but she produced the movie about Bob Crane, which was called Autofocus.
Mm-hmm.
She was on Notes from Underground. She produced The Badge. So she is a force.
You married good, John Schneider. You married good.
I did. She didn't do so well, but I did. So we have a combined like 90 years of experience.
Right.
Which is pretty cool. Right. Pretty cool. But the only time that I was thinking like, well, if you make the movies and you can't get them out there because you have basically shat in the sandbox that distributes the films, right. then what are you going to do?
Right.
And oddly enough, I'm one of these people that believes that God will actually provide you what you need before you need it. So by the time you realize you need something, rather than looking ahead for it, just look around. So we had done in 2016, after we got destroyed by a flood, we had two floods in 2016 and almost lost the two movies we did that summer. We put together an 8-week traveling film festival called Cineflix. Mm-hmm. And when we did that, we created a streaming platform called Cineflix DOD. digital on demand so that people could watch the movies from the traveling film festival. Well, that kind of laid dormant for a couple of years. And when we bumped up against the wall of distribution, Alicia and I looked at each other and said, well, wait a minute. We've already got it. We've got Cineflix, DOD. Right. So we went back and we did a whole bunch of design work. It looks great. It operates great. And we reinstated Cineflix DOD. So all of the movies that we've done up to and including Poker Run can be streamed at CineflixDOD.com, which means we do not have to in any way, shape, or form play with the likes of Netflix, whose politics and belief systems I am opposed to. Mm-hmm. I'm not opposed to them doing what they do. I just will not participate. Mm-hmm. So we have our own, and we just opened it up last week. There was a short film called Liberty Waning, and it's kind of a funny. Satire where a guy guy shoots people with a gun and they wind up capturing the gun and trying the gun in a court of law and ignoring the guy who pulled the trigger. which is kind of, I think it's important to watch. It is satire.
Yeah.
It is a short film. But in light of people trying to, and hopefully not successfully, but they're trying to call what happened in New Mexico an accident, and that somehow a prop gun went off. It's none of that is possible in my, you have not asked, but in my opinion, this is nothing short of criminal negligence, and somebody from Bedford Hills needs to go to jail.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. It might be Bedford Village.
Forgive me. People in Bedford Hills are freaking Bedford, out right now.
Someone from Bedford needs an orange jumpsuit.
Yeah. Okay. What about the armor and the second AD? Did more than one person?
I think it was the first AD. Well, now you've done first. It. You've opened the can of worms. The armorer, for everything I've learned.
Right.
The armorer was at lunch. The armorer is guilty of not locking up the weapons.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Unless the first AD had a key, and we have no idea, and I don't know why they would, but they might.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So the first AD then picked up a gun off a table and handed it to Alec Baldwin without checking it, mm-hmm. and told him it was cold, which means it's not loaded.
Right.
And then Alec Baldwin also did not check it. None of this is standard protocol on a film set. On a film set, I check the gun while you're watching me check the gun. Then I hand it to you and say it's cold. Then you check the gun while I watch you check the gun.
Yeah,
that's how it happened.
That's what I did a few weeks ago on the set. He stood in front of, and this literally happened.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, this was literally in the context of when Rust in this tragedy was at, you know, front page, and he stood there in front of the whole set and said, here's the gun, opened the chamber, pointed it at
anybody, right? If anybody on the set wanted to check it, they could.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's offered up to anybody on the set. So what mainstream media is trying to have us believe is that a huge, unforgivable series of mistakes or the list of things that had to go wrong is so long that it's impossible. Mm. It is impossible to have that many either completely ignorant people or people who were so arrogant that they don't believe the rules apply to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible.
Right.
So the more I think about it, the more I think that it's without question, it's criminal negligence. I'm hoping it's not something else, but I am hoping that the powers that be in New Mexico, and I've communicated several times with the sheriff there, offering him, you know, I said, look, I wasn't there, but I can tell you exactly what should have happened. And I'm happy to drive out there and just show you what should have happened so that you can determine what didn't. Kind of like an episode of Columbo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well,
it's
going to be,
it just can't be shoveled off as a terrible, tragic accident.
Yeah. It's I'm sure it's going to get litigated.
When an angry person or a drunk driver drives through a school zone and kills people, it's, what is it? I mean, at the very least, it's a negligible homicide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. This is all
there are words with lots of syllables that this is, and accident is not one of them.
Right. Right.
Let's talk about Poker Run. Cause you know who's in Poker Run? John Reap is in Poker Run.
Yeah. I know John. Yeah. Funny guy. Yeah. Yeah.
John is great.
And I love that you're doing.
So ready to work.
Is that right? Oh, that's great.
Yeah, he was great. And one of the things we did not revisit in Stand On It, and Stand On It was our tribute to Smoking the Bandit.
Yeah, which I thought was really cool. I thought that was a really cool thing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There's that great scene where Alfie Weiss, who is one of Bert's lifelong friends, has Jackie and Junior pulled over. And he's saying, you can't drive this piece of, right? Mm. That whole scene. That was not in Stand On It. So we put it in Poker Run. And John is basically Alfie. We pay tribute to Alfie Weiss. So that the deputy's name is Alfie in Poker Run. So it's great. It's great fun. And John did a wonderful job. So I want everybody to get a hold of Poker Run. It's fun. You can watch it with everybody. If you are a fan of Dukes of Hazzard, if you like to go to Rhode Island and squeal your tires on a dirt road, or the back roads of Westchester County, you know, there still are some dirt roads. I went to West Patton, and if memory serves, they had just built West Patton, and that school was on a dirt road. So if you enjoy dirt, if you enjoy dirt track racing, because we've got dirt track racing too, then you're going to love Poker Run.
Yeah. Well, and people should see Stand On It too. And I know you have to jump to do another interview. So Cineflix.
It's been a pleasure though.
CineflixDOD.com.
Go to CineflixDOD. That's CineflixDOD.com. If you want to stream it,
mm-hmm.
or you want a DVD. And I still love a product. If I'm going to pay for something, I want to be able to hold it in my hand and put it on a shelf.
Exactly.
So yeah, go to johnschneiderstudios.com. That's johnschneiderstudios.com. You can get it three ways, plain without an autograph. You can get it with an autograph. You can get it with an autograph personalized. It gets increasingly expensive when you do it that way. But I have to actually be there to sign and personalize the
DVDs. Absolutely.
So, you know, there's effort involved. It's kind of the shipping and handling part.
Got it. I
appreciate it.
So the film out now is Poker Run. You can also catch Stand On It. And there's a whole bunch of other product. Go to Cineflix.
A whole bunch of other ones there.
And John, it's great having you on, and congratulations on your unique path that you set for yourself the last 10 years. And you
with yours.
Thank you. Great to have you on.
You're
John Schneider.
The dream. There's no sense in having a small dream. Go for it. Dream
exactly.
Big.
That's a good way of putting it. I never thought of that. That's great. All right. Great having you on. Take care.